Welcome to Living Life on Purpose on the Living Well Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Suzanne Streisauer, and I'm a holistic life and career coach. And I've spent decades expanding my own consciousness, and I've found lots of resources for the body, mind, and spirit that I think you're going to love. On Living Life on Purpose, I'm going to be introducing you to many authors and experts on a wide variety of topics, including sustainability, spirituality, optimal health and well-being, and inspirational authors, musicians, and entertainers who are going to give you new insights and possibilities to enhance and enrich your life. Be inspired for life and join me today on Living Life on Purpose.
Well, welcome back to another version, an episode of Living Life on Purpose. I'm Suzanne Streisauer, and I'm thrilled to be with you here today. And I'm just contemplating about the last week's weather that we've been through and all the different things, the summer solstice and the aurora borealis, which has gone down into the middle of the country in the United States, and that we've had, you know, whether it's the rain on the East Coast or the dry on the West Coast, and just all of the different varieties and flavors of weather that we've been having since the summer solstice and actually for this year. And I've been contemplating on why in the world that could be we've had such extreme weather. And it turns out that in this last week we've had several coronal mass eruptions, and those definitely change our weather patterns. And they move things down lower on the latitude into the planet, or longitude, I'm not sure which that is. But anyways, they move it down further south. And so that's why we're having all the different sorts of things happening, I think, as part of one of the reasons that things are going on. So just a little FYI as we start this show. And I want to tell you a little bit about myself, my life purpose, and why I do this show every week. And my life purpose is to help people connect with the divine in practical ways that fulfill them and enrich the planet. And so all my shows on Living Life on Purpose and the Living Well Talk Radio Network are all designed to make that happen. So if you like that vision, you'll love the shows. And if you want to check more out about me, you can find me at SuzanneStreisauer.com. And I offer 20-minute coaching sessions complimentary if you're interested, and also have a guidebook, The 7 Steps to Living a More Purposeful Life, in the free resources on my website. So you'll find all kinds of interesting things there. And with all my shows that I do, I also make sure that you have all the resources on the Facebook Living Well Talk Radio Network page. So definitely check out all those things. And I want to thank Mona Garcia for her great music that she provides for the intro and outros to this show. And then to let you know that today, June 29th, is an interesting day. It's National Camera Day. And every, you know, show I look at different sort of things that tie into the show content and my guests for the day. And this was an interesting one because it is about pictures and the invaluable memories of our lives and world that we can document on our journey and our successes. And I thought, what a great thing in light of my interview for today. And so if you're interested in sharing that vision of your life and your world and the possibilities and your purpose in the world, a great way to do it is with pictures. And think about all the stuff that's going on with social media and Instagram and Pinterest and Facebook, all the different places where pictures speak 1,000 words and you can share your journey. And that's a perfect tie-in for my guest today, who's Dr. Maddie Dobbs. And she's the co-spiritual director of the Center for Spiritual Living in Carlsbad, California. And not only is she the director, co-director for the Center for Spiritual Living, but she's also a motivational speaker, certified life coach, and, again, she's an ordained minister. And her life's work has been helping people and organizations embrace change. And Dr. Dobbs has just published a new book on spirituality, using the metaphor of flight and a flight plan to help people find that fulfillment. And her new book, which we're going to be talking about in this hour, is titled Soaring, Living Empowered and Joyful. And you can also find her coaching website at soaringcoaching.com. So I want to welcome you to the show today, Maddie.
Thank you so much, Suzanne.
You know, I love it when people have really kind of diverse backgrounds and, you know, where they've come from, and I'm always fascinated about that. So will you give my audience a little sense of, you know, what led you into deciding you wanted to become a minister and, you know, become the accomplished person that you are today?
I have spent my life helping people move to the next level. And one of the reasons for that is I had a mom who really was a helper, a facilitator. She was the town's self-ordained social worker. And
well,
I saw
fantastic.
That in action. I saw her in action. And on the other hand, there was my father, who was stricken with a rheumatoid condition at a very early age, and I watched him handle that disease with grace, ease, and a lot of pain. That instilled within me the desire to help people through life struggles, to help people embrace change and to do it with love and joy.
Interesting. Well, that's fantastic, Maddie. So, I mean, with that kind of a background, I'm surprised you didn't choose the medical profession or being a social worker. What made you choose the path that you chose?
When I went to school, or as long as I can remember, I wanted to help people to feel better. So I thought I wanted to be a psychologist, although I had no idea what they were and how they did it. All I knew was that they helped people. And again, I saw my mother helping people. I saw my dad on his journey. And so I was not particularly drawn to the medical profession. I was drawn to helping people through my own energy, through interacting with them, helping people to ease their journeys, helping people to enjoy life more better.
You know, that's an amazing distinction, Maddie, because a lot of times people don't make that distinction and then they, you know, kind of flounder around because there's all these different ways you can help people, and you're talking about that distinction of how you chose to help people. So when you chose to interact with people and that was the venue that you wanted to use to help people, what type of a career did that actually lead you into?
I actually began as a social worker, a public assistance worker. And that started in college when I first thought I wanted to be the psychologist. And I went to the psychology classes, and they were dry, and we learned about the eye. We learned about concepts. When I got to my sociology class, which was my minor, there they talked about people and helping people, and they had a periodical at that time called Family Casework, and in that periodical they had real live stories of people in distress and how these quote social workers, actually it was a family social worker, helped them get through and resolve their issues. I used to go in the library and just read the stories just like someone, I guess, reading a comic book. It's really helping people resolve their issues really spoke to me on a human level. And so
you know, that's interesting and fascinating how we have a parallel background because I've been in social work and I loved it for that same reason because you could actually help people make their lives better, which is exactly what it sounds like you did As a social worker?
Yes.
Okay, and then you evolved out of social work, and then what?
I evolved out of social work again because when I got to the School of Social Work, we had to choose, and I chose psychiatric social work, which put me on a career path that led to working for a mental health agency. And at that time, so I worked for the Veterans Administration, I worked in the school system, and when I left mental health or moved to California, mental health in California had a new component. It was education. So our role was not so much to help the individual person in their individual distress, but one of my roles was to go to agencies like casework agencies, health organizations, school systems, probation, and help the people who were on the front line with individuals who were really having the issues, to help them have a more humane approach to their clients. So my role was to help the first line caregivers how to perform their role. And that, of course, led me into education and teaching. And then I realized that a lot of what those social workers and probation officers talked about had little to do with the pain that their clients were feeling and how to help the clients feel better. They talked about their own pain, which was the distress they felt in working in bureaucracies with heavy rules that didn't serve their interests, that didn't make them feel good about themselves. So I took off of school again. I needed to learn something about how do you help these people in distress, that if they had less stress, then they would be in a better condition to help the people that they were there to serve. They wanted to use the time with me to talk about how the bureaucracy was oppressing them or how their bosses, to talk about their own pain. So I thought, this is a little bit over my head. So I went back to school, and I came back with a new hat as an educator. I went to the University of Riverside in their school, in their graduate school, and I taught management courses about how to help organizations change and how to help the people in those organizations feel better. So there I was on that journey, and spent several years after that teaching in schools of public administration about how organizations work.
And when you did that, Maddie, did you feel like the issues that the caregivers versus the clients were that much different, or were they similar but just they were on the same different sides of the table?
They were similar yet on different sides of the table, Suzanne.
Give us some examples of the things that people were like the most common things of distress, Maddie, from both sides of the table, like from a caregiver perspective and also from a client perspective.
Okay, from a caregiver's perspective, dealing with the client, since I was no longer having firsthand, the client wouldn't follow the rules. They wanted to help the client. The client wouldn't keep the appointment. Or they wanted to help the client, and the client was in such distress, it was difficult for them to accept the help. Those were some of the difficulties and the frustrations of dealing with those individuals on a daily basis. From the client's perspective, from the organizational perspective, the caregivers couldn't get their needs met. For example, let me just say, working in the school system. Some of the teachers didn't have the products that they needed to help the kids or to train the kids in order to make their bulletin boards pretty. That came out of their own pockets. So resources was one of the issues. And then, of course, in the bureaucracy were the rules and regulations were mostly the issues. And, of course, if you were a client, rules and regulations were an issue, too, because it was hard for those clients sometimes to do the paperwork or get the paperwork or to meet the rules in order to qualify for some of the assistance that they needed.
So in your role as a teacher and facilitator, and I'm going to use the word impactor, in that sort of situation, Maddie, what were some of the ways that you managed to impact the organizations that they could then feel better about themselves as a caregiver and also have a better outcome with the clients?
One of the things that I helped the workers, I'll call them workers, do was to have realistic expectations. Some of the things that they were attempting to change were not within their purview to change. So I helped them to set expectations and to clarify those expectations with their clients so that they were on the same page, and to also manage their expectations in relationships to their managers. For example, some of the issues that I pointed out to caseworkers, school teachers, probationers, officers, where they might be angry with the manager, but the manager did not have much more authority than they did. That some of the issues were systemic. Some of the issues were the rules and regulations that are built into the bureaucracy. So a lot of what much of the impediments to change within organizations are built into the rules and regulations. I'll give you an example. Right now, the legislature, right now the governor of the state of South Carolina wants to get rid of the Confederate flag. But she doesn't have the authority. The authority rests with another group, the legislature, and the legislature has rules and regulations and procedures that they must go through before they can even put it on the calendar. So I had to help people to understand the system, and that was one of the reasons why I went to school, because it was baffling to me. And they would say, oh, I have a personality conflict with my manager, or I have a personality conflict with this person. And I'd say, no, it's not personality. You may bring your own emotional feelings to this issue, but this part of this problem is in the rules. So
It's funny, Maddie, how you talk about that, because I know when I left social work because of the bureaucracy. I couldn't, in spite of my best efforts, I couldn't change the system. And at times the system needed to be changed to accommodate a child, a family, whatever the case was.
Yes.
And so as you're talking, it's like it's making me tired on the one hand. So what did you do from there? Because you didn't stop there. That wasn't the end of your journey either. What did you do from there?
From there, I took, I don't want to call it a cushy job, but I worked as an an educator. But before we leave that, because I don't want to leave you tired, and I don't want to leave our listeners feeling tired, there is some relief that you can bring to those situations. That's to help the people doing the work feel good about what they are doing, just to manage their expectations so they're not pushing against something that's not going to move. And if you want to move it, there is a way to do it. And that's why I liked being an organizational change agent, because there is a way to go into an organization, to approach that organization, to get them to change. So
my let's
journey
talk about that, because that's I think the part that's, you know, the visionary part, the change agent part, is the part where the difference can really be made. Because I feel a lot of times, you know, people's hearts and souls are in things, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get a great result if the system is somewhat broken.
Yes, and so it's to get back to managing expectations, identifying what is in your purview to change. At the end of the day, what will make you feel good and that you have had a good day? What is it that you can do, one, for yourself and for the organization within the rules that can help you to feel good? And then the other thing, I did team building, helping teams to support and nurture each other, clarifying the communication systems, clarifying the leadership expectations, clarifying roles within a group. I could start with a group in the morning, and by 5 o'clock, people were clear. The nurses were no longer angry with the lab workers, or because the roles were clear, the expectations were clear, the communication systems got cleared up. That's how, from a change agent perspective, was to focus on the things that we can do. We may not be able to make a major impact on, say, mayors at this particular time, but within a day, what can we in this organization do to have you leave feeling good about yourself, good about your work, and making you excited to come to work the next day? How do we get rid of some of this conflict?
Well, that's certainly the much more positive spin on this whole sort of process, Maddie. And you know, I can see it's at the heart of your soul and the heart of your work and the heart of your book. But then you didn't stop there either. Then you wound up, did you go and you became an organizational change agent and then a minister?
I worked for several years as an organizational change agent and then as an educator. And then I left education, decided to retire early, and the question became, you're really too young to be retired. What are you going to do with yourself? And that's when my spiritual journey really became visible. I wanted to say it really kicked in, because you have to ask yourself, what, who am I? And what is it that I really want to do with myself? What's the next step for me? And then I said, oh, I won't worry about it. I'll just see what happens. Meanwhile, I had been concurrent with my role as an education, with my work in organizations. I had been on a spiritual journey, taking courses, and understanding more about spirituality, because what I didn't tell you, Suzanne, that while I was doing all of this moving from this role to that role, I had a very dramatic change in my life when my first husband passed away. He became ill with cancer, and that's when my spiritual journey really, really kicked in. I needed spiritual resolve. I needed support, and I turned within to my divine essence for that support. And I had a choice to make. One, a choice to go forward, a choice to stay where I was, and I made a decision to move forward and to move forward with as much positive energy that I could. And that positive energy came from the divine spirit within. I decided that I would make every day a positive day. I would try to find some joy in every day. I used positive affirmations to make myself feel better when I really didn't feel well. I walked, when I say didn't feel well, when my heart was hurting, I used to walk the beach and say, there's a rainbow at the end of this journey. There is another life of joy and happiness awaiting me. There is a rainbow at the end of this tunnel. And that spiritual resolve helped me to see the sunshine during the rain.
And I think that's a great thing for everybody listening to remember, and a great reminder that if things aren't so terrific in your life right now, there is a rainbow at the end of the journey or the tunnel, as Maddie says, and to know that and to feel that. And certainly I can feel that in your resolve, Maddie, as you're speaking, that there is that rainbow, that you did find it. Where was it that you had to find that from within yourself? Because I know a lot of times people want to do that, you know, the law of attraction, the secret, all that stuff, but they can't kind of get there. So how was it that you figured out how to get there?
One of the things that I did, I connected with a spiritual community. And I didn't understand that spiritual community, but I kept going. I didn't know the people there. I looked different than they did. They smiled and they were polite, and I smiled back and was polite, and soon we got to know each other. But that spiritual resolve, I believe that each of us has within us. I believe that there is a power for good that is within each of us. And some of my avenues to find that resolve came in the quiet through meditation. Even now, if I find that I have a block in my life, or if I feel that something isn't going the way that I want to, I get quiet in my spirit. I go within for direction, because I truly believe that there is not only a power for good within each of us, but there is a spirit within each of us that knows the way and will show us the way if we listen. It's that still, quiet voice within. So rather than looking around frantically, or it's to relax and go within, get quiet, and ask your God, your higher power, whatever that is for you, for direction. And I truly believe that that direction will be supplied.
So as a minister, Maddie, you wound up taking your experience in church and then turning that into actually becoming a minister and co-director of a church. What was that series of steps like?
Well, as I began to take these classes, and I was teaching at the same time, I said I wanted to know more. I saw other people there who seemed to have very strong spiritual resolve, and I thought, I want to know within my soul, within my spirit, I want to be more spiritual, although I didn't know really what that was. So I began to take classes, and I would tell people, most of the people in the classes wanted to be ministers, and I'd say, I'm taking these classes because I want to learn and I want to grow, but I'm not here to be a minister. I want to know more about my own spiritual journey, and I want to use these tools to help people on their spiritual journey. I think I wanted to be a minister. To me, was simply a higher evolution of the journey, the path that I had been on all my life. That little girl who, wherever this recitation came from, but I must have been less than five, and I was on the Sunday school program, and my recitation, I remember it to this day. I'm a little missionary ball going around the world, spreading love and joy everywhere. And my mom worked with me to teach me that. So somewhere between three and five, I should have learned it pretty quickly if I was five, but I remember her just rehearsing me this thing over and over. And then she dressed me up for this Sunday school program in this pretty dress. And when I said, I must have been pretty young, when I said my recitation and got it back, I got such positive feedback. It made me feel, I just glowed, I beamed. I knew that I was special. I felt special. So that vision of going around the world spreading love and joy everywhere resonated with my soul on some level. And so I, again, did not want a spiritual center, did not want a church, but one of the, I became a minister, and then the senior minister became ill with a life-threatening condition, and there was a succession of people moving up. Someone else was appointed, and then that person, my current co-spiritual director, turned to me and said, will you help me? And I said, I will support you. However, I will not be a co-director. Well, that didn't fly pretty well, and I jumped in with both feet. I was working hard in this support, and so I was fulfilling the role, denying the title, and I finally accepted it, and the rest is history.
Well, almost history, Maddie, because then you became an author. So,
yes.
So out of this journey, which is, I love this story, and it just does my heart good. So what made you become an author? I mean, you know, you're accomplished, you work with people, you run a church, then you become an author, and you create this wonderful book called Soaring, Living, Joy, Empowered, and Joyful. What made you write Soaring, Living, Empowered, and Joyful?
As I worked in the spiritual community, as I worked, I began to realize that there really was no separation between, then we may have worn different hats, different roles, but there really wasn't much different. I was simply working at a higher level of spirituality to help people enhance their lives. And as I lived this life myself, practicing and living my journey, it soon came to me that I'm living a life of joy and meaning. I'm living my purpose. I am that little missionary ball that's going around the world helping people everywhere or spreading love and joy everywhere, whatever it's said. And I then said, and I think I have the formula. The formula is recognizing that there's something bigger here, that there is something spiritual. There's a spiritual essence going on around us, and it's also in me, and that I have a choice. I can choose to go down one path, or I can choose a path of love. The path of love and meaning and spirituality. So part of it is the approach to life and the way you look at life. I can take that glass and I can see it as half empty, or I can see it as half full. I can be angry and disappointed because I only have a half a glass of water, when in my heart of hearts, I know I deserve a full glass. Or I can feel gratitude for the fact that I have this half a glass. And I can, and each feeling of gratitude helps my spirit rise. And there are other things that love. I can look around, I looked around and feeling love, even though there is not a lot of money. I thought I was rich as a child. I didn't know that we were probably living a lower middle class existence. It was the love. So being able to bring the love to a situation can, again, help the spirits move up a little higher in consciousness. We can feel more joy and live more joy and be more joyful. So I began to look at these things that raised my spirit, and I said, we don't have to really struggle. You may not have money, but it's an approach to life, and it's a way of looking at life in that our thoughts really do make a difference. Our thoughts about that half a glass of water are really important as to how much joy or gratitude I feel in that moment. So I thought bringing the love and bringing the gratitude. And then what happens when some days I'm just out of sorts? I've been out walking to the bus line all day, and I'm really tired, and that half a glass of water just doesn't feel like enough. Do I get angry and resentful and take someone else's water? Or do I settle down again in my spirit, express my gratitude, go within and look for what is another way to get what I need and allow that divine essence that's all around us, that abundance that I feel, to show me the way? So out of this thinking came my flight plan, the steps to help a person soar. And soaring is living a life of love and joy, no matter what the conditions and circumstances are.
And, you know, it's fascinating, Maddie, because I did, you know, get into your book. And one of the things that I found really interesting about soaring living empowered and joyful is that I could feel like flying. I could feel soaring. I could feel my spirit going with the currents and the breezes. I could feel that as I was reading your book. And I was like, wow, isn't this interesting? And the other thing that I really loved about soaring was that in it, I thought that the metaphor of a flight plan was really an interesting one. And that, you know, my parents were both pilots. And but this was a down-to-earth kind of flight plan. Your flight plan is a down-to-earth kind of flight plan that takes you up into the air, that takes your spirit up into the air. And it's not woo-woo. It's like you were very direct. In a really loving way, you were direct. And I almost felt like the minister was speaking to me directly in soaring, living empowered, and joyful. And I love that. And the other thing that I really, that touched me for a book from way back when that I loved was Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And I thought that was really fascinating that there were so many, although that was just the story of flying and soaring and, you know, that amazing life of a seagull. In your book, you actually teach people how to do that for themselves.
Thank you so much, Suzanne. That was my goal. I think I put on the hats of all my careers. The spiritual came out, the love that I have for people came out, as well as the educator in me. When I wanted to give exercises so people could really get it. I didn't want to have a woo-woo book that makes people just feel good. I definitely want people to feel good. And I also want them to feel good every day. And so I would invite people, if you find a section in the book that really has meaning for you, to go back and repeat that section until you really get it down and that aspect of your life takes off again, or you feel like you can lift your wings and soar. And so it had a lot of meaning.
Yeah, I love how you've done this, and you've spoken in a very straightforward way, and I felt like when I was reading your book, I felt like you were speaking to me, and you were making it possible as if I was one of your coaching clients, as if I was in a church setting, as if I was, one of the people who you're teaching in the organizational settings. Let's figure out how to make this work. And I feel like for every one of those things, you did that. And there's 12 flight lessons that are part of your flight plan, Maddie. So what ones, talk to us about two or three of your flight lessons as part of your flight plan.
I think I'd like to start with the igniting the love. I really feel that finding that love within ourselves, and love is an important aspect of spirituality, and I make it a spiritual book because I think that not only is there something invisible going on around us that we cannot touch, but we can see and feel. I can't touch the wind, but I can feel it on my cheek. I can't touch the sun, but I can see it glistening on the water. I don't see what makes that flower grow, but its beauty lets me know that it's something bigger than you and I. So I accept its existence. So awakening that spirituality within myself awakens my personal power, because I feel that if there is a spirit out there somewhere and it's taking care of these flowers, it blows in the breeze and it grows no matter what. The same thing on some level is happening for me, and that perhaps that all I need to do is get on the path and make a decision to find out what my purpose is. What is it that I want to do, and take off doing it? I watch the little snails in my garden. They're on purpose. Even the
I wish they weren't so on purpose, but yes, they're definitely on purpose.
They're on purpose.
Yep. Now, so one of the things that's interesting is that in Maddie's book, you know, even though she's a minister, she's not about, it's not, this book is not about the Bible, it's not about the quotes from the Bible. It's much more of a visionary experience of what possibility is. And to just give you an example of that, she was talking about, you know, her flight lesson 5, which is one of the chapter titles, and Igniting Love. And so in that chapter, she has the prayer of St. Francis, a meditation for igniting love within, setting a love a love intention, loving and appreciating yourself, practicing mirror talk, sending yourself positive messages, being loving, creating loving relationships, changing your perspective, expressing love in your work, becoming a love ambassador, and applying this flight lesson in your life. So love is much more all-encompassing than just what we normally think about love. And I think that's one of the things that I so love about your book, Maddie, is that it is much more encompassing, and it's much more real, and it's much more kind of interesting, too, I think. And it's not the usual stuff that you hear every day from a self-help book.
Well, thank you very much, Suzanne. May I talk about another flight lesson that I think is just so important? That is designing your own blueprint for success. I think this flight lesson, which helps you identify what your interests are and get clarity on not only what it is that you want to do to change any circumstances in your life, because sometimes we're at one level, we simply are ready to take the next step in our journey, to move to the next level. Like when I retired and left education, what was next for me? And what passion did I have? Well, how could I put all of this together to chart the next level in my life? How do I get out of this rut if I'm in a rut? It's not just talk, but the guidelines are there to help you choose even an action plan. So developing your flight plan is one's own blueprint for success. What is it that you want to do? Who do you need to talk to? What's the first step you need to take? And it's all about you.
So within that, I'm going to read actually a little quote from Maddie's book, Soaring, Living Empowered and Joyful. And it kind of goes into the line with what we're talking about. And this is where she's talking about the flight plan. Developing a soaring consciousness. Your consciousness is your belief system, how you view the world. Is your world a loving, friendly place, or is it fearful and ego-driven? An important part of your soaring flight plan is building a soaring consciousness or a soaring attitude towards life. Each flight lesson shares a soaring practice important to developing a soaring consciousness. The fundamental tenets of a soaring attitude toward life are: believe in a higher power and yourself, Know that your thoughts have power. The power is within you. Feel love, the basic energy of the universe. People who soar believe in themselves. They have an attitude of, yes, I can. Most of all, they believe in an infinite power in the universe, a source of wholeness and goodness that is available to them by right of divine grace. So I think that, you know, you are, and then you share stories in here. You have something about Oprah and other people that you've worked with and examples of clients, that you've really done a nice job with this, Maddie. You've really kind of helped people kind of move into the half-full glass, not the half-empty glass.
Thank you, Suzanne.
So I know that you're the minister for the Center for Spiritual Living, and as I was looking through some of these chapter titles, I noticed that some of them kind of parallel some of the time when I spent at the Center for Spiritual Living. We have one in Oroville, and I absolutely love the ministers down there and their message, and that the thing I think that's great about this is some of this actually does parallel the Center for Spiritual Living practice of helping people to get where they need to go in their lives and to have support. So whether it's praying to increase altitude or lifting off with gratitude, some of the titles of the chapters, visualize it, picture it, affirm it, is definitely something from the Center for Spiritual Living. So tell people a little bit, because we're running out of time here. The hour's gone by really quick. Tell people about your book, where they can find it, so that they can, if they've been inspired by what we've been talking about this hour, they can actually get a copy of your book.
You may get a copy of my book in several places. The quickest place is to go to Amazon.com, and currently we have a 99-cent promotion going on the Kindle, and that promotion will be short-term. It won't last very long, so if you're a Kindle reader, that's one place to get it. Also, at the Balboa Press .com website, it's available, and it's available in your local bookstore also, although you may have to order it from some stores.
That's but right. Barnes, and is it also available on Amazon too, Maddie?
Yes, it is available on Amazon.com. And Suzanne, if I may take a liberty here and say, if you like the book, will you write a review? And if you're not sure,
absolutely,
you're going to like it.
I think that's a good thing for listeners to know, is that if you do buy books that you've heard about on the Living Life on Purpose show and you write reviews, it helps the authors boost their books. And so if you like their message and their vision, like with this book and Maddie's book, and that you help them get seen more, what that does is that sets it up so that Google will actually take them and put them out into the world, so that we can start shifting the consciousness of the planet to being a joyously half-full rather than pessimistically half-empty. So I think that that's a great thing. So if you get a book, any of the books, either Maddie's book or the ones that I do in the nonfiction author showcases, definitely go and write a review if the book has moved you. So in the remaining minutes that we have, Maddie, are there any final thoughts about your book, or do you want to just shift and we'll talk about your coaching for a few minutes?
You may shift. The purpose of this book is to help you live a life of joy and a sense of your own personal power, particularly if you believe that the power is within you and you can have anything, be anything, do anything that you want, if you first do it in your mind.
And you actually, in your book, have a chapter on turbulence. So if people wind up running into resistance and trouble, there's a chapter to help them, you know, get through it when the times aren't so easy going.
Absolutely.
So give people a couple of tips in that regard, Maddie, because I know people right now are having a lot of hard times. So what are some tips to deal with turbulence?
One of the things to do to deal with turbulence is always go back. I call it go back to principle or go back to shore. I'd say, oh, I'm living on the edge. And I had a psychologist friend would tell me, climb back to safety. And so if you run into turbulence, we go back to the basics, believe that there is a divine power in us, through us, and all around us that's always protecting us and guiding us to our good. Call on your higher power, even if you've never called before. It's a perfect time to get to know them.
That's true.
Number one. And the second one is to get quiet in your spirit and simply allow that divine essence to infill you, to talk to you, to know which way to go. There have been times when things have happened. It could be something as simple as driving, although this wasn't simple, driving home at night in a heavy rainstorm from San Diego State, and my car hydroplane, and it spun me. I went across five lanes, and it spun me around facing the oncoming traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of panicking, I said, I went within. What do I do now? What is my next step? So remembering the truth, and even if you don't know how to pray, use your version of prayer. I believe that those things, remembering the truth, that we're surrounded by good, the good is within us, have faith in a positive outcome, and just continue to know that truth. Because, you see, I believe that our thoughts are not only things, that they outpicture in the real world. Everything you see in this world first began as an idea or thought, or it was God made.
And whichever way it came, it has value. And particularly
absolutely,
if it's long-term and staying. So definitely, if you're listening, I recommend you pick up a copy of Maddie's book, Soaring, Living, Empowered, and Joyful. And you also have coaching, Maddie, which people can find at soaringcoaching.com.
Okay.
If you like,
yes,
her vision of coaching and how she has, I'm going to assume that you kind of coach from a similar philosophy to the way that you've,
yes,
been with me on the radio today, right, Maddie?
Absolutely. That is my philosophy. My book is my philosophy, helping people find their way in a storm.
That's right. And what a great teaching tool that is, and a way to start. Do you have any free resources for people? SoaringCoaching.com?
There may be some things on my website. I have to take another look at. Go to the website. Yes, there are some free,
okay,
resources. And soon to be provided is the Soaring Assessment Tool, which lets people take a look at their life and decide where they are on an assessment tool that I call Soaring. Are you ready to soar?
Right.
Are you already soaring? Where are you on your journey?
And those assessments were really clear and simple that Maddie had as part of this. So I will have her information again on the Living Well Talk Radio Network Facebook page. And Maddie, I want to thank you for joining me on the Living Life on Purpose show today, and I want to thank you for being the positive force that you are on the planet.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being here, Suzanne.
So my show next week is going to be with another woman who's making a difference. It's funny, she's also from Southern California. Maddie's from Southern California, and my next guest for next week is also from Southern California, Julie Marie Miller, and she is going to be talking about her commitment to charities and nonprofits, and particularly animals and autistic children and people. So come back and join me again next week on Living Life on Purpose. In the meantime, bye for now.
I hope you've enjoyed the show today. Enjoy all of the quality programs and archives we offer on the Living Well Talk Radio Network. I look forward to having you back with me again next week. And in the meantime, remember, be inspired for life.